Hello, this is Karen.
And Jim.
And we want to thank you for listening to our son's internet radio movie theme. Also, this episode is brought to you by us. When Stuart's computer broke, we stepped in so he can keep talking about movies and people we've never heard of. We have no clue how this stuff works, so please enjoy whatever internet thing is about to happen.
You think of Alan Hale as a fine actor, but his friends think of him lovingly as the man who is to bring the greaseless potato chip to the eagerly waiting world, a 1937 article reads, and thus begins our scientific examination into the life and inventions of Alan Hale, Sr. Hello everyone and welcome to the Laboratory of the Golden Science Films podcast. We've been tucked away deep in the research and development wing of the Golden Silent Films podcast corporate headquarters, taking intricate measurements and breaking down complicated equations to invent this episode. We are plotting a deep dive into the silent stars who were equally at home in a lab as they were on the silver screen. Big Hollywood names signing 8x10 publicity photos at the same time they were filling out patent forms. More specifically, this is an episode where we put the incredible work of Alan Hale Sr. under the microscope. Before we look at the highly detailed schematics and overly engineered diagrams, let's give the usual Golden Silent Films podcast social media hangout information. As usual, please join Golden Silence Cast on Instagram for up-to-date info on this little podcast. And for all of you inventors on Twitter, just follow at GoldenSilence1 or just search Golden Silence Cast and we ought to pop up. All these screen names and sites will be in the episode description in case you are interested in checking us out. We would love to have you on the team. At both social spaces, you'll get behind-the-scenes pics and info, upcoming episode reveals, and other fun film-related materials. And never forget great photos of our scientifically inclined podcasts. Also, if you're listening to this program on Spotify or Apple Podcast, do leave a review, a rating, or both. All of those ratings and reviews help immensely. Live your best review-leaving life and help our show grow and reach fellow silent film fans. Whether getting us more exposure in the wide open spaces of the greater podcast world, or letting us know how we can improve, we appreciate the feedback and always want to bring you the best show possible. And do subscribe to the Golden Silent Films podcast. While our output can be a bit all over the place, if you are subscribed, you will never miss an episode, and the moment new content drops, it will go straight to whatever piece of high-tech machinery you listen on. We are square in the middle of our third season and don't want you to miss a second. Before we look at the scientific methods of Alan Hale Sr., let's have a quick refresher on the life of this acting superbrain and his less-than-scientific pursuits. Alan Hale was born Rufus Edward McAhan on February 10, 1892, in Washington, D.C. Though he would make it to the movies, Hale showed his big brain energy by starting out life wanting to be a doctor of osteopathy. To non-docs out there like me, a doctor of osteopathy emphasizes the treatment of medical disorders through the manipulation and massage of the bones, joints, and muscles. These ambitions definitely display a leaning towards the scientific. His earliest forays into entertainment business came when he appeared in 1911's Cowboy and the Lady. Despite the early start, he wouldn't find his footing until 1914, when his career really started to take off and the regular work came rolling in. On top of his movie house exploits, Hale was also no stranger to the stages of Broadway. The first Broadway performance I could find for him came in a show titled The Poor Little Rich Girl, which ran from January 1913 until June of that same year. All in all, I found six productions he appeared in over a span of 20 years, 1913 to 1933. Just another feather in the cap of a man capable of so much. By 1921, he was making movie magic with the likes of Rudolph Valentino, Lon Chaney, Douglas Fairbanks, amongst many others. His looks and talents would see Hale best suited to character parts and second fiddles, putting over the stars of the picture. His talent was strictly restricted to playing heavies in front of the camera. He would do a great deal of writing and directing throughout his career as well. He would have 8 credits as a director coming between 1915 and 1927, one of those films being 1925's Braveheart starring Rod LaRock, whom we'll mention a little more in a bit. As far as writing is concerned, according to a 1929 issue of Motion Picture News, we learned that after a start as a cub reporter on the Philadelphia Daily Paper, Hale also wrote over 200 motion picture stories. Overall, for his career, Alan Hale Sr. would appear in 235 movies throughout his life, in one Robin Hood film, The Rogues of Sherwood Forest, which was released shortly after his death in 1950. He was a jack of all trades who had talent, creativity, and an incredible work ethic that gave him a career anyone would be jealous of. Over his career, Hale appeared with Errol Flynn in 13 films, including his second foray into Sherwood Forest with 1937's The Adventure of Robin Hood. All those talents and experiences serve as feathers in the cap of a man capable of so much professionally. On the personal side of things, he was just as fulfilled and successful. Alan Hale married actress Gretchen Hartman in 1914. Gretchen's sister Ruth was married to silent film actor Carlisle Blackwell. This connection to the movies would help Gretchen enter the film business herself. The two would be married for over 30 years and bear three children. Hartman and Hale's three children included actor Alan Hale Jr., who you probably recognize as the Skipper from Gilligan's Island, and also who you might recognize as looking almost exactly like his father. Alan and Gretchen would have two daughters as well, Jeannie Hale and future script actress and script supervisor Karen Hale Wookie. Now that we have set the table, let's get to the reasons why this episode exists. As we were researching our previous episode, digging into the covered wagon, we found some amazing info that was great stuff, but really had no business being stuffed into an overly long episode as it was. So when this podcast started, one of its core tenets was finding the weird, wild, and unknown stories behind the silent films and silent stars that we love so much. I was diving into the life of Alan Hale when I came across a couple sentences in his Wikipedia article that really changed the course of this show and necessitated a whole follow-up episode that was completely unplanned and had to be made regardless of how it wonked up our show's release schedule. Now here's the quote that started this whole weird side tangent of an episode. It went like this. Hale also had success as an inventor. Among his inventions were a sliding theater chair, the hand fire extinguisher, and greaseless potato chips. Now, to show everyone how my mind works, or doesn't, I guess, I could read a whole article and story about an actor's major movie appearances, all the megastars they worked with, and famous offspring, but the thing that stuck with me was that they created greaseless potato chips. So I continued learning about Alan Hale and the covered wagon, but his laboratory work never really left my brain. No matter what I was learning about the film, I always found myself hoping I would wander across more resources detailing the inventions of Hale. It was so weird, and I really haven't experienced feelings like this since the podcast started. Something so out of the ordinary, but a story that needed to be told that I needed to dedicate an entire episode to it immediately. I wanted to give this story more time. Actually, I had to give this story more time. There was no option other than to dedicate an entire episode to this discovery. Now I just had to find out more about Alan Hale and his work. Little did I know this would end up a whole new view of the stars that we love to watch. In fact, Alan Hale Jr. would say about his famous father, "My father was a working actor, not in the least star conscious. Senior wasn't content to rest on his laurels or his career. He had an ambition and curiosity that pushed him to see the world from different perspectives. He saw things as they existed, but could never let go of ways that he could make them better. As a man in the lab, he pushed the limits of science and human ingenuity, all while looking good on screen, of course. Hale wasn't the only celebrity tinkering in the lab and constructing new and wondrous things. In fact, one of his co-stars was doing great things while also waving the banner of Hollywood inventor. In an article from the March 1935 issue of Popular Mechanics magazine, we learn Rod LaRock has applied for patents on numerous inventions, among them being an improved type of lens shade for cameras, a new kind of dry cell, and a self-fluorescing screen that illuminates a darkened room. In addition to inventing, many celebs had hobbies that involved creation or science. Hollywood heartthrob Gary Cooper was an amateur taxidermist and feathered Indian war bonnet maker. Actors Bing Crosby and Richard Arlen were known to be shortwave radio hams, according to Popular Mechanics. And that's just a few of the examples of the ways the stars spent their spare time. All of these folks were cool, and their hobbies are cool, but we're here to chat about Alan Hale Sr. and his adventures in inventing. In an article for the Star Press newspaper out of Muncie, Indiana, dated January 25, 1942, we get a written look at the experimental exploits of Alan Hale. The article was written by Harold Heffernan, and it reads, "Mr. Hale is Movieland's greatest gadgeteer, maybe the world's greatest gadgeteer, and as such, he receives almost as many screwball invention ideas, perpetual motion machines, and devices to heat the Empire State Building with sun's rays as the patent office itself. The actor operates in Hollywood, the article continues, whereas a serious and profitable avocation, he manufactures theater seats and fire extinguishers and is willing to consider almost any idea that has a chance of working. You heard that right. One of his biggest breakthroughs was indeed a sliding theater seat, clearly superior to the normal, average, everyday theater seat. Turning to influential science magazine Popular Mechanics, we get a deeper look at that special chair among some other wildly fantastic ideas knocking around in Hale's lab. By sheer numbers, Alan Hale was a prolific inventor. We get a look into his inventing life and the wide array of inventions and patents he came up with. This next bit comes from a great article in the March 1935 issue of Popular Mechanics magazine. In an article entitled Hobbies of the Hollywood Stars, we read, "Perfected by Alan Hale, veteran screen actor, a sliding theater chair allows spectators to push their seats backward instead of rising when latecomers arrive. Hale has developed a fruit jar lid that automatically seals itself, and a new type of highbrow spectacles that give a clear, unobstructed view in all directions. Just now, with the help of two engineers in his private laboratory, he is improving a new internal expanding automobile brake. The first set, installed on his own car, has given efficient service for more than 70,000 miles. This is certainly a wide spectrum of ideas and plans. And it's important to remember, this is happening in the mid-30s. Cars as a thing weren't even that old yet, and he's already trying to improve and perfect their braking systems. Really wild stuff when you think about it. The one that really caught my eye, though, was the self-sealing lid. I really wish there was some sort of schematics or diagrams or even pictures of this jar. Did it work on early vacuum technology or some sort of crude jar motor? Unfortunately, we may never know, and I'm stuck screwing non-jar lids like a total square." Now, whilst those plans seem well and good and relatively mundane, Hale also has some more out-there ideas when it comes to scientific breakthroughs. A sliding seat and jar are decent, but when you start adding radium and eliminating grease in your inventions, things have really leveled up. Starting in the cutthroat world of snack foods, we get this blurb and photo article from a 1937 magazine that tells us, "You think of Alan Hale as a fine actor, but his friends think of him lovingly as the man who is to bring the greaseless potato chip to the eagerly waiting world. Truly a man ahead of his time, I would say." The Star Press newspaper gives us a more detailed look at that magical, grease-free chip. It reads, "The chip uses the protein of the skin," Hale says, "and preserves it free of rancidity. With added vitamins, the chip is a perfect food, can be put up in cans. Some crackpot thought of that once. Hale made it practical and is going on the market with it." Staying with the Star Press out of Muncie, we find out more about the inventor's use of radium, which, in retrospect, sounds a little scary since radium is a bit on the radioactive side. The article explains that Hale himself is astonished by nothing. Currently, he is exploiting a radium-active disc that glows in the dark, useful for blackouts, perhaps. Lighting would seem to be an area of expertise for the actor-slash-inventor. He wasn't content messing with the radiation and branched out into the ultraviolet spectrum. He also has a new ultraviolet ray that glows with a constant 2.637 angstrom units, important because most lamps vary in intensity and can't be used for delicate medical work. "The new lamp," Hale says, "is a sure cure for shingles and athlete's foot," the Star Press explains. Alan Hale was a man of ideas. Ideas that aimed to make people's lives easier. He did a lot of his best work in peacetime, but it was during the war that he stood as a voice of the United States government as they sought to create a sort of, I don't know, governmental edition of Shark Tank, if you will. This is where the National Inventors Council comes in. The NIC was a government department established in 1940 as part of the Department of Commerce's Office of Technical Services and designed to serve as a clearinghouse for inventions with possible military and national defense uses, and to bring these to the attention of the U.S. Armed Forces. It was an organization willing to seriously consider any and all ideas so long as they benefit the U.S. military. With the attack on Pearl Harbor on Sunday, December 7, 1941, the need for new ideas and discoveries to aid the war effort was now needed more than ever. In the aftermath of the attack, the United States formally entered into World War II on the side of the Allies. Harold Heffernan writes about the effects of the war on Hale's work. He writes, His Hollywood plant, now geared toward peaceful pursuits, is anticipating the manufacture of bombs. It can be turned into an arsenal on very short notice. His factory is also working on a substitute for carbon dioxide because there may be a shortage during the war. Hale's own experiences as an inventor taught him that the United States was full of creativity and ingenuity and certainly possessed the ability to turn the tide of war. Give these so-called screwball inventors a chance, and you don't know what new sensation we might develop. Maybe something that would help put an end to war for all time, Hale would say about the potential of the National Inventors Council. Heffernan adds, in other words, the federal agency is about to recognize the crackpots that have been Mr. Hale's confidants for these many years. The National Inventors Council, just getting underway, with no less than the famous Dr. C. F. Kettering, Vice President of General Motors, as its head, is throwing the doors wide open and inviting all inventors to start inventing. By 1942, the doors of the NIC were wide open, and the people of the United States were doing their civic duty in sending ideas in with inventions of all sorts. In an article from the January 2, 1942 issue of Science magazine, we get some hard numbers in regard to the submissions. The article reads, Dr. William B. Coolidge of the National Inventors Council of the Department of Commerce stated that the council has already examined more than 35,000 inventions and suggestions during the past year, and that of those examined, several were of extreme import and might possibly affect modern warfare. The expectations the actor had of this program were sky high, and without anything holding them back, the populace could take on anything, even more radioactive ideas. Heffernan explains, Hale considers that this clears the way, removes the red tape and impediments in the way of inventors, many of whom are not technically trained and thus do not follow set patterns of improvement. It is no secret that all belligerent nations are racing to find means of tapping the most inconceivable power of U-2335, the form of uranium which would potentially make all conceivable forms of power obsolete. Some obscure amateur might just as well stumble on the solution, Hale points out. I love the optimism that folks with little or no technical training might be messing around with uranium. I'm no scientist, but I feel like that's probably not the best idea, though. Regardless of any nuclear shenanigans, I love that Alan Hale Sr. was such an optimistic guy. In his Hollywood life, he saw the best in every role he took and made those roles incredibly memorable. The world of inventing was no different. Whether it was something he was working on or being a cheerleader for others, there was no idea too ridiculous, nothing too silly for him to at least give a listen to. That level of positivity is a fantastic trait and really something everyone should strive to emulate. In fact, that positivity is one of the main reasons Hale was so happy to see the National Inventors Council exist. It'll be a boon to people with imagination, Hale would explain. Still, I hope it doesn't deflect too many inventions from me. People send me things from all over. Most of them don't work, some of them do, but they're all interesting, especially the perpetual motion machines. I got a hold of a dilly just the other day. Wouldn't it be wonderful if it worked? As an organization, the National Inventors Council outlived the terrible war, but it would only continue into the mid-50s. After that point, its functions and powers were transferred to the National Bureau of Standards when the Commerce Department abolished the Office of Technical Services. By 1973, the NIC was relocated again, this time from the National Bureau of Standards to the private sector, where it was overseen by the Academy of Applied Science and the Franklin Pierce Law Center. While singing the praises of the NIC and its work to give the United States an edge in World War II, Hale was still toiling away in his factory, bringing his own wild ideas to life. Harold Heffernan tells us, Hale's chief pride at the moment is a new and patented process for transferring photograph prints to almost any surface. On metal or a gateware, a type of pottery, for instance, the photographs are practically indestructible. The Smithsonian Institution is interested in this one as a means of preserving historical documents. Despite his love of inventing, the siren song of the screen could never be ignored for too long. In his article with the Muncie, Indiana paper, The Star Press, Harold Heffernan leaves us with this. He writes, No actor in Hollywood has made quite so much money from a sideline as has Hale. His factory supervision keeps him busy, but always he seems to have time to make a picture and to imprint a characterization that keeps fans calling for more. So, after all this talk of inventing and big brains and even bigger ideas, I thought a trip to the virtual home of the National Inventors Hall of Fame was in order. If you want to swing by via cyberspace, you can definitely find the site at www.invent.org. I rolled in thinking some sort of Alan Hale mention or blurb might be there. That would be super cool, right? Seeing as Hale had some pretty solid inventions and was a pretty solid inventor making cool breakthroughs, right? But, spoiler alert, Alan Hale Sr. is nowhere to be found. He remains firmly outside those hallowed halls despite coming up with some pretty wild stuff. He's not even in the search tab under famous inventors. This seems to be a glaring omission to not include a man who brought inventing to the mainstream with a little Hollywood flair. He even spoke and advertised for a governmental inventing consortium seeking to end all wars by finding that right idea, that perfect idea. Now, don't get me wrong, the National Inventors Hall of Fame has some pretty heavy hitters. You have your Alexander Graham Bells in the telephone. There's Thomas Edison and all his work. You have Henry Fonda and his inventions with the automobile. And do not forget Clarence Birdseye with his advancements and developments in the frozen food sector. Like I said, there are some pretty big names in this thing, just to name a few. Now, I'm not saying he needs to be amongst those names, but Alan Hale totally deserves a mention. Many of the various sports Hall of Fames have sections for contributors. The WWF even has a section for celebrities. Now, these annexes, these other adjacent wings of the Hall of Fame, are for folks who have made impacts in their sport without really any on-field experience. I could totally get behind a contributor spot for Hale, for sure. He definitely has put the time in and pushed the world of inventing forward. Now, let's let the National Inventors Hall of Fame know that you support the candidacy of Alan Hale. Point them to this episode. Let them know he made some incredible breakthroughs. Let's make it happen. Hail for the Hall 2023, right, everybody? But since this episode is going a little long, I want to get off my soapbox and let's look to wrap this baby up. As we lay this episode to rest, it is time to find out where your favorite silent stars are laid to rest. This is a segment where we join our favorite cinematic stars on the other side of the cemetery gates. The history, the art, the celebrity spectacle converge, and where are they now? Your guide to paying your respects to the inventors that have entertained us so much. While Hale worked tirelessly in the lab and on set, his lifetime of dedication to his craft would come to an end relatively early. He was only 57 when he passed away on January 22, 1950 in Hollywood, California. He died following a liver ailment complicated by a viral infection. He was survived by his wife Gretchen and their three children. For all the cemetery explorers out there, if you want to pay your respects to the great inventor and actor, take yourself no further than Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Glendale, California. Once inside the cemetery, head to the Whispering Pines section and find Lot 724, Ground Internment Space 5. There he is buried with his wife Gretchen, who rests in Space 7. Their daughters Jean and Karen are also buried in Forest Lawn, while Hale Jr. was cremated and his ashes appropriately scattered at sea. Despite the death of Sr. in 1950, his legacy would live on through his son, literally. Remember when I said they looked incredibly alike? Jr. offers an anecdote that really illustrates the point. In a 1964 interview, Hale Jr. would say, "The older I became, the more the confusion. It's almost as if I'm two people, not one. Even old friends get confused. When the old Errol Flynn movie Robin Hood played on television for the first time, one of them said to me, 'Saw you on TV last night. Great.' I had to tell him, 'That wasn't me. That was my father. That film was made in 1937. Well, that could be a tough situation and shadow to be in. It would prove comforting for Hale Jr. and his children. It's almost like my dad isn't gone," Hale Jr. explains. "Because of TV, we're all still talking about him constantly. At least once a week, my children chorus, 'Daddy, look, Grandpa is on television.'" As the lab doors close on this episode, we want to thank you for joining us for this scientific story time. We really want to thank you for hanging out with us for an episode that featured very little in the way of real movie info, but quite a bit in the way of discovery and patent office shenanigans. Did you enjoy this side tangent of an episode? Do you have a favorite actor or actress with a fascinating hobby? What off-the-beaten-path Hollywood stories do you think we should look at next? Let us know all that and more at the various social media hangouts of the Golden Silent Films podcast. On that note, if you have forgotten, we are on Instagram and Twitter Let us know what you think of this episode. What silent-related movies, past or present, do you want us to dip into next? Our world of silent movie knowledge and experience is constantly growing, and we need your input for our future episodes here in Season 3 and beyond. You can find us on all social media zones, whether it's Golden Silence Cast on Instagram or at Golden Silence 1 on Twitter. You can always follow us or learn more about each episode. And again, if you listen to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcast outlet that allows it, subscribe, rate, review. We here have calculated that it'll help a lot in exposure for the show, and we love hearing your thoughts and ideas. We really, really appreciate all of your incredible support, and seeing how much you folks are listening only makes us want to make bigger and better episodes through science. We hope you had as much fun experimenting today as we did. Now, with all that being said, thank you to all of you fine listeners for all of your fine listening. And don't forget, the science is golden, and the talkies, they're just a fad.